Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 148, Ego States Psychotherapy, April 18th, 2008. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
You know, in terms of working with that model, I think it allows a person to be tremendously whole. Like it yields, when you use it in a certain way in treatment, very deep and profound changes in the person. It's not a superficial, or using the model, the ego states this way, let's say, would not be a superficial treatment. It's a deep treatment that really changes the, let's call it, mental and emotional, even spiritual level of the person who goes through it. It's very holistic, I would say. Whereas some of the other kinds of treatment models and therapies strike me, anyways, as more superficial.
That was the voice of my guest, Sarah Hannah Radcliffe, speaking about her unique approach to psychotherapy, which draws upon ego state theory. Sarah Hannah Radcliffe, M.E.D., is a registered psychological associate in Ontario, Canada. Over the past 30 years, she has counseled thousands of parents, couples, and individuals in her full-time private practice in Toronto, Canada. She practices emotionally focused therapy for couples, process experiential psychotherapy, energy psychology, EMDR, and cognitive behavioral therapy for parents. She's the author of Raise Your Kids Without Raising Your Voice. She also has a website at www.parenting-advice.net, which offers education and practical advice to the international community on all aspects of parenting. Now, here's the interview. Sarah Hannah Radcliffe, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you so much.
Well, it's good to have you back, sort of back, because I actually interviewed you before on the Wise Counsel podcast, my other podcast.
That's right. Yep, that was great, and that wasn't too long ago.
Yeah, right. And if I recall correctly, you're also a regular Shrink Wrap Radio listener.
Very big fan of yours and that show. I love it. Yep, happy to be on it.
Yeah, that's great. So that's why we really had to get you onto this show. And on Wise Counsel, of course, I was interviewing you about your very wonderful book, and I really mean that. Listeners, if you have kids, you should go out and get it. It's called Raise Your Kids Without Raising Your Voice.
Mm-hmm.
And you gave a terrific interview about that on Wise Counsel, but you have another area of expertise that we thought we could explore with you here on Shrink Wrap Radio, which is kind of a collection of approaches, I guess, that you refer to as ego state psychotherapy. Is that right?
Right. Ego state therapy is a general term for any therapy that uses the concept of parts of the personality. So there's lots of people who theorize that way, Freud being one of them, for example, or transactional analysis that uses the parent, adult, and child parts, or in the popular writings, I don't know if you've heard of Hal and Cedra Stone. They have something called voice dialogue. Nancy Napier is a big writer with a theory of parts. Maggie Phillips and Claire Frederick. There's lots, like lots and lots, probably endless. That's just a little sampling. Watkins and Watkins wrote a book called Ego States, and they really explain that. So all these different people actually use the concept of parts differently, but they are using a concept of parts of the personality. So I guess some people might call them sub-personalities or parts of the personality or ego states. It all means the same thing.
Yes, I've certainly heard the term sub-personalities used,
mm-hmm.
and And I've heard of voice therapy. I don't know if it's the same as voice dialogue therapy. There's a group near, where are they? They're in Watsonville, California, and I heard somebody from there present. It might be the same group. And they do talk about different parts, sort of parent-child internalized dialogues that they have people sort of act out. I suppose Gestalt therapy would fall into
that.
Well, sure.
That. Yeah, that's right. That's a part theory also.
Yeah, with the top dog, underdog, and various other parts that end up dialoguing with one another. Now, before we go too much further, I suppose we should get your credentials out there in the sense that you've been doing therapy for some time, right? How long have you been involved as a therapist?
Yes, I've been a counselor for about 30 years now. And, I've had some experience.
Okay. So that's long enough to believe that you might know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great. So let's drill down a little bit more into it. You mentioned transactional analysis, which I recall reading about, I think it was in the early 1970s, a psychiatrist by the name of Eric Byrne.
Right.
And I haven't heard his name or transactional analysis in years, so
right.
I was kind of surprised to hear you bring that up.
Well, I'm just bringing him up as an example of a parts theorist, I guess we call him. I don't know what really happened to transactional analysis as a treatment. You're right, I haven't heard too much about it lately either. Although, you know, they were really just introducing, I don't know if they were just renaming Freud's parts, you know, the kind of parent or superego type of parts, and then the adult type parts or the ego type parts, and the more animalistic or child, what transactional analysis would call the child parts. I think it really paralleled
yes.
the Freudian model.
Good point.
Yeah, but the theory is not the treatment. Like all these, what all these people have in common is that they are theorizing that personality is complex and consists of different parts. and many of the theorists would say that some of these parts are more adult-like, and some of them are more childlike, and some of them are more parent-like. You know, so a lot of people would group them that way. And then within that, they might have lots of different kinds of parents. I think transactional analysis had positive parenting parts, like nurturing parents and critical parents, for example, in part of the parent part. And then the child part would be the natural child or the adapted child. You know, so there's lots of different ways of dividing it up. But it's not, none of it is the treatment. It's just the way of understanding the person's inner world.
Yes. And just another footnote here, as we're talking about parts, is you may have heard me mention on other episodes that, boy, it probably was 30 years ago or pretty close to it, that I was in a workshop with, in one of the early workshops on NLP with Bandler and Grinder.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember they did some individual work with me, and the instruction was, close your eyes and go in and check in with your parts. And ask your parts if any of them, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, right. I didn't know what they were talking about.
And so they didn't even name the parts. And I thought, well, that's an interesting idea. That way, you know, there was no sort of getting hung up on, is it parent or child or id or ego?
It was just
kind of acknowledging, well, you've probably got different parts and different voices inside.
Mm-hmm.
And just check in and see if anything kind of comes up in response to the question that they were asking me.
Right.
So let's talk a bit about, you know, why is this a useful concept to you? As you point out, it's a theoretical construct, but then you've got some actual practical therapeutic applications that are meaningful to you.
Right. You know, in terms of working with that model, I think it allows a person to be tremendously whole. Like it yields, when you use it in a certain way in treatment, very deep and profound changes in the person. It's not a superficial, or using the model, the ego states this way, let's say, would not be a superficial treatment. It's a deep treatment that really changes the, let's call it, mental and emotional, even spiritual level of the person who goes through it. It's very holistic, I would say. Where some of the other kinds of treatment models and therapies strike me, anyways, as more superficial. I would say something like cognitive behavioral treatments of a lot of problems would be an attempt to silence a whole bunch of parts. You know, like you all be quiet in there while we give you the rational information that you need.
We're going to pretend that you're just a rational being and nothing else.
Right, right. See, in this way, when a person can kind of meet their whole self and embrace all the different, often competing voices that they have inside of themselves, they feel they're most authentic because, you know, there's no attempt to shut down, shut up, or push away any part of themselves. And that's the beginning of the healing because every part is welcomed and whatever parts are disturbed can receive the help that they need. So people just feel terrific when they're able to use this work themselves. Like they're, it gives them a good and complete feeling. Like it just hits the spot is what I would say.
Well, you say when a person uses this approach themselves, can a client use ego state therapy on themselves?
They will be able to after they've had some experience of it. First of all, even their understanding of it helps them a lot. Very often in the first session or two of therapy, I'll draw a person a map of how I view the psyche, let's say it, or their inner world. And I just tell them this is just a theory, and it's just, you know, kind of my theory, which is shared by a lot of other people. It's not necessarily accurate, but it's this is how I'm kind of looking at what goes on. And I draw them a big circle with a line down. I used to draw it down the middle. Now I draw it off to sort of one side, so you have 4/5 and a fifth kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah, and in the fifth, I put a big C there for the conscious mind. Okay, that's where we think we know our stuff. And the 4/5 is for the unconscious activity over on the other side there, which is kind of really where all the action is. And on the conscious side, I put a little dot, and I call that an empty chair. And I say, in that chair sits who is in one of the parts of our personality that we call that part I. We refer to that as I like this, and I do this, and I feel that, and I am that. But this whoever is I is always a changing character, you know, like the... when we go to work, we may be manifesting one of our eyes, and at home with our spouse, we have another one, and with our children, maybe another one, and when somebody bothers us, maybe another one, and so on, right? And people kind of can relate to that because they know that they're not always the same. You know, sometimes they're mature, and sometimes they're confident, and sometimes they're scared, sometimes they feel very small, you know, so they understand that. And then I put on the conscious side another little dot, and I say, well, this one is... could become conscious, it's there in all of us, but you have to kind of learn how to open the door to it. And that part is called the witness. So meditators, for example, will encounter the witness that allows them to kind of observe who is sitting in the I chair at a given moment, and can also observe what's going on in the inside, just taking note and observing maybe a little, learning a little bit about the parts on the other side of that line. And that line, actually, the dividing line between the conscious side and the unconscious side, is the body wall. So if you go through the body wall, like you can feel things inside. For example, you may be in a certain situation and you notice that your heart is beating rapidly and you're scared, although there's nothing really terrible going on. So your body is telling the conscious mind that there's a problem. And it's the unconscious side that is causing the heart to beat rapidly. Somebody there on the unconscious side is having that problem. Now, the conscious mind cannot turn the problem off. It may, you know, use a strategy to manage it, but it cannot solve the problem from the conscious side. And then, I don't know if you can kind of picture what I'm drawing here, but on that 4/5, I put a whole bunch of dots in there. I put little black dots and big white circles. And I say, on the black dots, these are all our different parts, many of whom are wounded parts. They've got some issues there. And the big white circles, these are our resource parts, parts that are creative or spiritual or adult-like, maybe intuitive. These are going to be our helpful parts. And we have a whole bunch of these parts. And if we didn't have all these resource parts, well, you know, you'd be a bag lady on the street, say. You know, you're not functioning very well, right?
I love the fact that you bring in the idea of internal resources right mm-hmm. away like that.
Yeah.
So I think we've gone through 4/5, is that right?
Well, we're in that 4/5, but I explain to people how we get those wounded parts. And I say, Just for example, that when a person is an infant and their mother's trying to get them to sleep through the night, So I draw a little picture there of another dot, and then this baby who's being trained wakes up in the night, nobody's there, and the baby screams and screams and cries and cries, and nobody comes, so eventually the baby falls asleep. And that happens again the next night, and then the next night, and a neural pathway is being formed in the baby's brain that says, hey, you know, when it's dark out, there's no point in waking up because nobody's coming. And the mother's all excited because the baby learns, so to speak, to stay asleep, not to wake up. But what's also happened is that the baby learns the whole feeling of wanting, yearning, and nobody's coming. And that's programmed into the brain and the body and the way the whole thing feels of there's nobody there when I want them to be there. And that forms one of those little dots. And then other things that happen after that in life that feel anything like that will go onto that pile. So we have, a four-year-old kid who's waiting for his parent to come pick him up from carpool, and all the other parents have come and gone, and this little guy is sitting there crying because his parent hasn't come yet, and it feels like that earlier feeling. And so it's going to go on that pile. If his parent shows up and actually reprimands him, so to speak, for crying. Like, what are you crying for? You know I always come. I was just a few minutes late. Like, don't cry. Then the child develops that feeling that he had, obviously was the wrong feeling according to his parents. So it gets stuffed inside and sort of stored there for the rest of his life. And he also develops a feeling of shame for having the wrong feeling, being criticized for that. And so this pile, you know, of what later he might call abandonment, of all things that feel like that, his friend moves away, he has a girlfriend he breaks up with, and later gets divorced, whatever it is, that pile gets bigger and bigger that has that same sort of feeling. So that's the abandonment pile, right? And then I just show them that there's no way to get out of childhood alive, so to speak, because we're going to have a failure pile, you know, because there's so many things we can't do, and all those feelings get on the failure pile, and there's going to be a rejection pile because we go to nursery school and not everybody likes us there, or, you know, people look at us funny, and then, you know, 30 or 40 years later or 50 years later when somebody looks at you with that look, all the experiences in that rejection pile, it's kind of like I have a light bulb go off, or they get triggered, so to speak. And that's why we so-called overreact as adults when, you know, things are going on. The whole pile of all our life experiences with all of their body sensations and memories and thoughts and feelings, the whole thing lights up. And so we may overreact to small incidents, you know, that are going on now.
I like your way of explaining this in very down-to-earth language. It, basically it sounds like you're getting across the notion that we all have issues, that it's kind of normal to have issues of one sort or another. There's some very common clusters of issues, and even what, you know, some people in more high-flown language might talk about, an existential point of view that just by virtue of existence,
we have. Right, so it's very normalizing. And, you know, people are usually nodding their heads up and down, and they really understand. And then I also point out that eventually some of these piles, and then I sort of change my metaphor when I'm talking about this to a crowded room where there's just too much stuff, too many of these frozen memories sort of in a room. And they start rattling at the door, and, you know, when it's overcrowded. And this rattling happens, and I draw some arrows here, sort of pushing against that wall, that body wall that I drew, that line down the middle of the circle. I say it starts knocking over there in your most vulnerable, genetically vulnerable places. So if you happen to be a headache person, for example, you may start getting headaches. Or if you're a stomach person, then your stomach acts up. And you're a back person, your back goes out. Immune people get their diseases. And if you have depression in the genes, then your depression is active. And if you have anxiety in your genes, then your panic attacks start up. And you can have more than one thing going on. But what happens is, on the conscious side, your brain notices, hey, there's something wrong, you know, as all this so-called stress is knocking at that wall. And And then I draw another wall down for them. So we have two walls now. And I say, so what people usually do when that happens is they try to drown out the racket by adding another wall because their first wall isn't good enough. And they do that through their addictive processes, like maybe they'll drink a little bit more, they'll work a little bit more, or they'll, you know, whatever their favorite addictive is, you know, eat a little bit more, starve themselves a little bit more, exercise, whatever it is, you know, because they want to drown out that racket. But as I keep drawing the arrows, like going deeper and deeper and saying, once it starts knocking, it will not stop knocking until you open the door and say hello to it. But, you know, after the addictive processes don't work, then people might try some pills or something that can shut down that noise. And I say, well, the pills will help the person shut down the noise, but the problematic parts, the ones that are crying out, are still there. And they can see these dots now all over the picture. So they say, yep, they're still there, right? And then a cognitive treatment, I'll draw another wall, you know, that, well, maybe we'll just, like, we'll just decide that it doesn't matter anymore and it's not real. It's not, you know, something we have to be concerned about. And to that I tell them that's like riding a bike on Monday and breaking the wheel off of it as you go over a stone. And then on Tuesday you get up and say, well, it's a new day. I'm just going to ride this bike anyways, you know, without fixing the wheels.
Okay.
So, you know, so now we've got four or five walls that I've drawn in this little circle. And I show that at nighttime, all the walls collapse. And all this stuff coming over from the subconscious side starts moving over to the conscious side. So people are tossing and turning, and they can't sleep well, and they got their insomnia.
Oh, what an interesting integration that is.
Yeah.
Because I have experienced that.
Haven't we all? Haven't we all?
Know,
there's nobody alive who hasn't experienced it.
Yeah, 3 a.m, it's like I have no defenses.
Right,
And there have been times when I was just felt like I was being boiled alive in anxiety.
Right, exactly. So, and then I show them that sometimes, you know, one of the little parts realizes the wall's down and it zips across to the conscious side with a dream, a very intense dream, and says, here's what I'm trying to tell you. And that depends if the person uses their conscious mind to pay attention to that dream or not, because it might stay on that side after the walls come back up in the morning. But most of the other stuff recedes back to the subconscious side. And so all this activity is there, and that's why I explained to the client that the only way to get, you know, deep help and resolution is to help those parts that are currently on the subconscious side. There's no amount of talking about what's going wrong, you know, that's going to help you. There's no amount of even positive thinking or whatever that's going to clear all this up. You have to help those wounded parts that are crying for your attention. And now, when I say this, a lot of people are crying. Like, just looking at the picture touches their parts because all their parts are listening.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah, it is such a... You know, I had an idea for you, and it may be one that you've already had as I was listening to this, which is, you need to write another book.
I know I do.
And I think... I was picturing it as you teaming up with an artist, perhaps even a cartoonist, who could write very simple cartoons and diagrams illustrating this process that you've just explained, that would match kind of the simplicity of the explanation that you've just given us.
Well, I'm even one ahead of you there. What it needs is those, you know, those sheets, those plastic see-through sheets that they have in children's books, and you
can
layer them, you know,
right,
one on top of the other. Because when I draw the picture for each client, because it builds upon itself, right?
Yes.
So the book needs to have that kind of thing in it. I've thought of it, but I haven't got any time.
Right.
So I thought, you know what, this is the next best. I'm going to go on Dr. Dave and at least put it out there, you know?
Good, yeah. Well, it's fascinating. So feel free to elaborate any more, or if you're ready to get into how you would begin to use this, because I know you call upon a variety of intervention techniques to deal with various issues. So where would you like to go next?
Okay, well, you know, one thing in conclusion there is that we need to be on the 4/5 side of that diagram to do our work. So we're going to have to use a technique that gets us onto or into that less conscious realm. Or I talk about, like, on the conscious realm, we're in our beta brainwave. And if we just close our eyes lightly and relax for a little while, we can easily get into alpha. But all that action that we want to help with is stored at least in theta and maybe deeper. So we need a way in. And you know, some people like Watkins and Watkins, who wrote the book called Ego States that I mentioned before, they use hypnosis as a technique that goes in. And I think I've heard speakers on your show talk about doing that as well.
Yes.
But I don't use formal hypnosis. I might use light trance because there's easy ways to sort of talk a person into a light trance just by the way you're talking to them, really.
Right.
And I might use Gendlin's technique, Eugene Gendlin's focusing technique. I'll do that quite a lot because we want to go through that body door. And I'll explain to you how I do that in a minute. And I might use EMDR, and I might use the energy psychology, like the EFT or one of those tapping techniques. Any of those will get us to the right location to do the work.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And these are techniques that we've touched upon lightly in other shows, but if
that's
you want
right.
to go into detail in any of them, that's fine.
Well, I think maybe the focusing one. I haven't heard you interview somebody who does focusing.
You're right. I haven't. And I know that there are a lot of people who
I've got a colleague for you. I've got a lady you should speak to.
Okay. And I actually got to meet Eugene Gendlin and hear him talk about focusing a few years back. And I had already been a big fan of his because before he wrote his book on focusing, he was the editor of my favorite journal. Yeah, he edited a journal for many years called Psychotherapy, The Art and Science, I think it was, of Psychotherapy. And it was one of the few journals that I found worth reading because it was like Shrink Wrap Radio. It was very eclectic, and so it appealed to me. But I digress. Let me pass the mic back to you.
Okay. So what we're looking for is a way to get in touch with a frozen package, so to speak, of experience, which will include, like I said, the visual memory maybe, or the body sensation, the physical sensation, like a rapid heartbeat or sweating or whatever it is that goes with it, and cognitions, all of which are going to be disturbed in a disturbed package. And if we're remembering something, a specific scene, for example, a memory that somebody had of something bad happening at age 4, 5, or 6, whatever, that whole thing is, as I put it to the client, fresh frozen, like a package of peas that you stuck in your deep freezer. And when you open the package and begin the thawing process, then we can do the healing of that scene, whatever it is, that memory can be transformed permanently. So all of those techniques by themselves, actually, focusing, EMDR, energy psychology, they will all do a certain amount of reorganization of the inner world. And it's interesting because something like EMDR might do that. I heard you speaking with Francine Shapiro. I was just listening to that one, and she's explaining it as processing or reprocessing a scene, which may or may not have ego state elements to it, although EMDR and ego state work is a perfect fit. I'm going to give you an example, really, maybe to just show you what might happen.
Good.
Right. Okay. So this is a lady I was just talking to a little while ago who had a very problematic relationship with her father-in-law. He was a real mean, abusive, insulting guy, and he was part of the family, she had to deal with him all the time. I think for some years he lived in the house, and then some years he lived out of the house, but she was always involved with looking after him, and he was just horrible. And she came to me, and she could not really understand why she couldn't deal with him. Like, she knew intellectually he was just, had some serious problems, and he wasn't a nice man, and nobody liked him. But it just, she just couldn't get over the effects of it, although she wasn't too clear in describing the effects of it. So what I started off with was focusing, and that technique asks you to pay close attention to what's happening in your body as you think about the troubling scene that you might be, or issue, whatever it is. So for her, this was an issue, and I asked her, well, look, imagine your father-in-law standing here, right in front of you now. Just take a look at him. Close your eyes lightly and put your father-in-law like on a screen in front of you and look at him and tell me what happens inside your body. And if a client is experienced at this, and they'll know what to do right away, and otherwise you have to kind of help them search their body, like, you know, just look what's going on in your head, your neck, your chest, you know, your stomach. Just pay attention. And so I asked her, and she said, well, her body hurts. I said, well, where does it hurt? She says, in her chest. So with focusing, you want to pay a lot of detailed attention, because the more attention you pay, the deeper and deeper you go into that area, which ultimately goes into the subconscious side. So I say, well, what's it like there in the chest? She says, well, it's like a knot, some kind of knot, like a small black knot, or maybe no, it's a small black ball. And you see, a person will refine what they notice there, and she kept refining it. I asked her some questions. Well, what's the texture of the ball? You know, is it smooth? Is it hard? Is it soft? Is it, you know, rubbery, whatever it is? And she says, oh, it's rubbery, and you know what? It's growing larger. It's larger there now. It's changing colors. Now it's like one of those red, blue, and white balls, you know? And I ask her, well, is it moving, or is it still? Is it, you know? And she says, it's wobbling, and oh, my goodness, it's growing spikes. It's growing spikes now. It's pointy. It's sharp, you know? And so the client herself is getting more and more information about her inner experience as she's trying to describe it, and eventually this ball, you know, becomes a very large ball, actually, by the time she's done with it, with spikes all over it. And when you've got as much physical description, that is, you're looking for maybe colors and textures and sizes and movement, things like that, then in the focusing model, we ask for a handle, which is a word to sum up the emotional quality of all of that. We leave that pretty vague, like all of that. And so this handle is an exercise of trying on a bunch of different words. So she starts off with frustrated. She says, yes, frustrated, that's what this is. So I ask her, well, see if frustrated fits exactly everything you've just described. And she says, no, it's not really frustrated. It's actually hurt and frustrated. I'll say, okay, well, see if you can find just one word that captures all of that hurt and frustrated. And she'll say, well, she said something like sad. Yes, sad fits exactly. And then she says, no, actually there's spikes there in that ball. No, it's like I'm the ball and I'm being badly punctured. I'm wounded. That's it. I'm wounded. Wounded fits exactly. And, you know, what she went through there was a very typical trying on of words. You keep trying, and it's not quite this, and it's maybe that a little bit. And all of a sudden, you go, yes, this is it. Now, this is where I will then move away from the focusing and move into ego state. Once the person gets the word, I will take them deeper now to meet the parts, so to speak. So I say to her, okay, well, you've got this movie screen in front of you, and I want you to put something on the screen such that it illustrates this wounded feeling exactly, but in a way that if somebody walked into your movie theater right now and they looked at that screen, they would know exactly what you are feeling. So you can use something from nature, or it could be an animal, it could be a person, it could be a combination of anything that would convey wounded. Now, it's always a surprise what the person comes up with, and I'll tell you, I was surprised when this lady came up. She says, I see baby seals being bludgeoned to death. So, wow, you know. So, now, I ask her to look at one of those seals. And I say, okay, well, just take a close look at one of those little baby seals that's being so badly wounded. And sometimes I'll say, you know, use your X-ray vision and look deep into that seal and tell me what it's feeling. But in this case, because it was a seal being bludgeoned to death, I didn't ask her to do that. I just said, talk to that seal, just silently. You talk to it and let it know that you see it being so hurt and that you care about it and that you want to help it. Now, what we're doing here is having the person's adult ego state contact a wounded ego state. And we're going to see if there is a contact, because the person is going to silently say something, basically repeating something of what I've said in their own way. And then I'll ask the person to see if the seal heard you, like, or whatever part they're talking to. Did it hear you? And this is something that the person cannot consciously create. This part either hears or doesn't hear. And very often the person will say, no, it's busy being bludgeoned to death. It's crying. It doesn't hear me. And I'll keep having them talk until the part on the screen actually looks their way, which inevitably happens. And you see, the same things happen over and over again, which tells me that this theory is a theory that is a natural fit. There's something real going on, because with client after client, you know, day after day, week after week, year after year, there will be these similar responses. So eventually the part on the screen will look at the person who's in the client's chair here talking to them. And when they get to that point, then I tell the client to take part of herself and put it on the movie screen somewhere near, in this case, this little baby seal. Just tell the seal that you're coming. So, you know, put yourself on the screen, not too close. You don't want to frighten that part. And just approach it, still talking to it, telling it that you see it and that you see that something terrible is happening and that you want to help it. And always checking back. Does it hear you? How does it feel about you joining it there? Mm-hmm. How is it? Is it safe? Does it feel comfortable with you? Is it okay? And sometimes the parts on the screen, you know, don't want the adult part joining. And sometimes they're fantastically relieved that somebody's coming. It really depends on the attachment history of the person I'm dealing with. So if the person has had a lot of good attachments in the past, the part on the screen is usually very happy to see somebody coming. But if they've had nobody consistent there for them in their life, nobody was ever really there for them, the part on the screen is often very suspicious of somebody coming. It doesn't want to deal with them, so that can happen. But anyways, in this case, this lady starts approaching it, and she says, the seal can't really be bothered to respond to her because it's so tired, it's so weak, it sees her coming, but it can't even move. It's close to death. So
that says so much, doesn't it?
Oh, gosh. You know, and this lady, I mean, you know, so basically I have her just sit beside the seal and just give the seal a blanket, you know, and often that's what's happening here. Just sit beside the part and give it a blanket. And she just sees that the seal needs to rest, and she's sitting beside it. And at that point, the healing is really beginning. And she's sitting quietly beside it and has a blanket. And if we, you know, we're at the end of our client hour, we're just going to close the screen off there. Or if we have more time, we can sit and watch for a while. And what will eventually happen is that revival will start to take place. But usually at the end of a first session like that, the part that we contact will be utterly exhausted no matter what we do, and it will just need to rest. So anyway, she's sitting beside it, and I ask her to just keep it company and now close the screen, like just put a little curtain across the screen and check in later and see what's happening with the little seal and with the adult, just see what's happening. And I suggest to the person that they might still be sitting there just like that, or something different might be happening, and they just have to check in every, you know, couple of hours, a couple of days, whatever they want, and see what's going on. But when we were finished with that, this lady said, gosh, I just didn't realize that seal is me, and I didn't realize how much I've been suffering and how tired I am of it, and how, you know, so it really took her to the deepest part of her experience. It was so moving for her.
And you didn't have to interpret it for her. It became clear to her.
Absolutely. I mean, everything just kind of falls right into place for the person, and they... It's as I said at the beginning, it's just so deep and profound for them. Usually the client is utterly exhausted after we take one of these excursions in, and I call it like psychosurgery. It's like you're going in, you're doing something very deep, and you're beginning to open and find things there and change them. I mean, in this particular one, we didn't do too much of a change, but very often a client, let's say with an abusive childhood past or whatever, will be remembering scenes that are not with seals, but with their actual memories of their parent mistreating them or something. And they will do more than go in and just be with the part. They'll actually rescue the part. They'll get rid of that parent. They'll take over and let that child know that they're now that they are the ones who will be looking after them. They'll do all kinds of reparenting, but it's not a pretend thing. It's because it's in the state where the child really is. Like very, I'm trying to put together all the different things while I'm talking to you, but the different possibilities. But sometimes the child, when they see the adult on the screen, will just jump into their arms and want to be held and cuddled and rocked. And there's such a It's like the organism knows what it needs. That's something that Eugene Gendlin always talks about, too, that we know what we should have had, and we know what we need, you know, and nobody can really provide it for these wounded parts. But when you go in and provide it from your own adult to your own inner wounded parts, true healing really, really occurs. And people become absolutely transformed from this work.
That's marvelous. And in previous conversations, you've kind of let me know that it seems to happen rather quickly.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's really amazing. You know, you don't have to kind of cover every traumatic incident in a person's life whenever you start to do this healing. The whole sort of inner family becomes reorganized. And depending on, like, for people who've had really bad abuse histories or incest or, you know, physical abuse throughout childhood, whatever, they're going to need to do more than other people. But sometimes we're just having, you know, everything is intact and we're just under a particular stress right now. And if we can find our tired, exhausted part and really respect it and heal it and nurture it, you know, more like it's more of a simple issue, except that we're constantly ignoring our deepest selves. And as a result, we get sick, you know, physically sick, whatever. Yeah. This is a much healthier alternative. Or sometimes we're just in conflict, you know, like, you know, you have to work and you don't want to work right now. You want to go to sleep or you want to go play golf or something. And you can feel the tug of war on the inside. And what you're asking about, can the client begin to take care of this? Well, the client who learns to listen to the parts and take them seriously can actually picture the part that doesn't want to do the work, let's say, and say, okay, well, I see you there, and you just want to go play, and promise you, you know, I'm going to work for a few minutes, and you just wait for me over here. Here's some toys. You play while I'm working, and then I'm going to take you out to the ball game or some whatever. You know,
sure.
Like, you could actually negotiate. But again, it's not pretend. It becomes very real for you, and you work with your whole inner family in a much healthier way.
So they can learn a technique like Gendlin's focusing to do progressive relaxation with themselves and
yeah.
and go into that light trance sort of state that you were talking about.
Well, it becomes very spontaneous. Like you mm-hmm. only have to do it once or twice for it to sort of, like, now your brain knows where to go. You'll find those parts pretty easily.
And then you just kind of check in with your parts and see who needs attention.
That's right. And you provide it. See, a lot of people are acting out, of course, like they're trying to get the love they need from people out there in the world who never really provide all of it, right? Like when you're yeah. grown up, it's really, you cannot get the healing that you need from other people. There's a time in childhood where you can get your nurturing met. It's kind of, everything is open, but then something seems to close, and when it's closed, other adults cannot heal your wounded part. It's your own adult who can actually heal your own wounded child and do the best job of it ever. I mean, there's just, you know, this. You just have to learn how to do it.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've heard of each of these elements in some other setting.
Of course.
But I get the sense that you've kind of put together your own synthesis.
Yeah, you know, but it's true in a certain way, but I don't think it doesn't feel to me like I've invented anything at all.
Okay.
Because everything, first of all, the different parts of what I'm doing do come from different places, but what happens inside the client is just, I think that's what taught me, you know, like you're really always just asking the client what's going on, right? And the same thing goes on for everybody. So there's a natural healing process that happens.
And you've really learned to respect that process.
Yes, I think that's
it. And to respect that inner capacity that if you can lead a person through these steps, that something's going to open up.
Exactly, right. So it's a process-oriented therapy in that I will, you know, put the steps in front of them. But what opens up is always, you know, an amazing surprise, but it follows the same categories. It's hard to describe, but like the same sort of things will happen, but it's always unique the way it happens. It's quite amazing, actually, as a therapist to sit with clients and see what goes on. It's an adventure with everyone.
I really appreciate the detail that you were able to take us through that particular case. Now, what sort of a range of difficulties or problems have you been able to address with this approach?
Well, it's an approach that can work on so many different levels. So, you know, what it tends to be really good for is when there has been any kind of mistreatment or abuse or neglect anywhere in the child's, in the person's life. I say child because some of that is child abuse, but sometimes there are adult wounds, like, you know, your spouse betrays you and stuff, and your whole system goes into chaos, and ego state therapy will help for that as well. When you are experiencing all kinds of conflict, then ego states, you can actually show a person how to call all their parts to a table and let each one say what it has to say about a specific issue, so that the conflicts that we feel inside are not pounding, don't become a pounding headache. They actually, you can hear one part wants this and one part needs that and one part wants that, and you teach the person how to organize help and make unity go on between that. It's a different kind of exercise, but anyways, that's for like simple problems, I would say. But if there's depression or anxiety, especially where there's a critical process, where the person kind of beats themselves up and they're always, they're in a process that is either causing guilt or shame or low self-esteem, you know, in the world of the inner family, we say it can't be a dysfunctional inner family. It has to be, well, it probably is a dysfunctional inner family if those things are going on, but what we need to do is make it a functional inner family where nurturing parts support and heal wounded parts, and there is no, critical parts. There's actually a part of the personality that one of the theorists calls, well, it's a critic part, they call it the parent mimic, and this part tends to beat us up. So you do something, you go, oh, that was so stupid. But if it's really bad, then you're always insulting yourself, and, you know, you feel like you, it insults you, basically. It tells you you can't do anything and you're no good, and, you know, all that critical process. And the rule for a healthy family is that no verbal abuse can occur. Like, you don't want verbal abuse to occur in your home. You don't let your kids attack each other, and parents don't attack kids. So in your inner family, that can't happen either. And if somebody is in there attacking, then that part needs to be excluded temporarily while it receives therapy. And I sort of send this part with the inner therapist to outer space and protect the part that has been so beaten up or assaulted verbally or whatever. Sometimes we'll use domes, like a protective dome to shelter parts from other wounding parts. But most often I just stick that critic in a box and send it to outer space with its inner therapist and, you know, come back when you're healed, sort of.
Fascinating. Well, you've done such a wonderful job of both giving us a cognitive map of what you do, mm-hmm. but also I think a good part of the feeling of what you do has come through here, and also of your creativity in the ways that you apply it. So I wonder, as we wind down here, is there any last thing that you'd like to say that maybe you haven't had a chance to get in?
You know, I guess one of the things that just about this is just that there's a parallel between this work and the family therapy work that I like to do too. You know, you start off saying, well, you know, I wrote that book on parenting and this is really a different kind of work, but I actually see it much more similar as opposed to different, because the outer family dynamics, that is real parents and real children, you know, you want them to have a healthy, supportive, nurturing family. And in the inner family, you want to treat your inner parts the way an excellent parent would treat their children. So you need to be able to listen and to accept all the different feelings without judgment. And really, the processes are very much the same. And certainly one of the things that, you know, made me want to write that book, Raise Your Kids Without Raising Your Voice, was that the whole concept of abuse in the outer world, you know, and its effects on the inner world, because it's just totally mirrored there. Like, if you've been mistreated, then your inner world does become a dysfunctional family, and it needs to be healed. So it's all the same. That's all I want to say. I think it's like all the same, outside and inside. I just want to have a peaceful, loving world.
Okay, well, Sarah Hanna Radcliffe, not only thanks so much for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio, but also thanks so much for being a listener. You can imagine how it warms my heart to have such accomplished listeners as yourself.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
I I hope you enjoyed this interview with Sarah Hannah Radcliffe and found it as informative as I did. I'm particularly impressed by how articulate she is about her work and the kind of creative synthesis she brings to it. While she's quick to point out that she hasn't invented anything new, I definitely get the sense that she's developed her own unique blend of techniques and a beautiful way of describing the process to her therapy clients. In prior conversations, I got the sense that Sarah might feel a little bit worn down because of having a master's rather than a doctoral degree. In my opinion, however, it's not the letters that come behind the name that makes the real difference. Of course, I do like to see some letters, but it's clear that Sarah has taken lots of training beyond her master's degree and that she's honed her approach over quite a few years. I've never met her face to face, but having read her book and conducted two interviews with her now, I really feel a tremendous sense of trust with her and would not hesitate to refer clients to her or even to consult her myself for that matter. If you're raising kids or know someone who could use a good book on parenting, I highly recommend her book, Raise Your Kids Without Raising Your Voice. It's very solid and full of wise advice. And it's not just about not yelling either. It covers the full range of parenting. And it's definitely based on experience. If I recall correctly, she's raised 6 kids herself. Her website is also a rich resource for parents. And you'll find that once again at www.parenting-advice.net.
You want to learn about the inside and what makes us tick? You could find all the answers you need real quick. Get on the couch with Dr. Dave. Leave your worries behind. It'll all be fine. It's shrink wrap radio. It's all in your mind. For insight into personal growth and the inner life, here's Shrink Wrap Radio with Dr. Dave.
Well, April 15th is tax-paying day here in the United States, and I'm afraid the tax man took a very big bite of my income this year. And so I've been talking about how I was going to be in Barcelona inviting listeners in that area to come visit me. I've now decided I can't afford to go to Europe between the taxes I just had to pay and the value of the dollar against the euro and various other factors. So it looks like I'm not going to Europe in May. Boo-hoo. I was kind of looking forward to that. I'll find a cheaper vacation somewhere closer to home. Big changes, though, on the Shrink Wrap Radio website. I heard from a couple of listeners, in other words, by popular demand, that they were asking for a feed for the shows that are in the archive. That I heard from at least one person who said, hey, it's kind of a lot of work to have to go in and download these shows one at a time. How about putting them in a feed? Well, I didn't know how to do that, and so it kind of sent me on a quest and a learning curve, and I now have an approach. And so if you'll go to the Shrink Wrap Radio website, you'll notice there is a new drop-down menu up at the top where the menus are, kind of in the middle. There is a new menu called Feeds, and you'll find the URL, the feed URL, for broken out by year. So there's a feed for 2005, all the shows in 2005. There's one for all the shows in 2006, and there's one for all the shows in 2007. Now, I'm going to be experimenting with getting these into iTunes so that you'll be able to subscribe to them there as well. But right now, you can certainly do it by going to Shrink Wrap Radio, copying the feed address for whichever of those archive years you're interested in, and then pasting it in either into iTunes or whatever podcatching software you're using. Okay? Another feature that I've certainly thought about but not known how to solve is the issue of transcripts. It would be wonderful if I could make all these interviews available to you in with a typed transcript, and probably wouldn't attempt to do the whole show, but it would be nice if at least the interview part was available in text form. I have a listener who does transcription and who volunteered to do it at a discounted rate, at about half of what he would normally charge. Jason Howard came up with a very generous offer. But even with his offer, I don't really feel that I have the income from this work. You know, it's mostly outgo and not income to be able to afford that. Now, he's graciously transcribed one show already. It's number 52, Happy Birthday, Dr. Freud. I have to proofread it first, but then I've got, and then I'll figure out a way to put it up somewhere on the site. So I'll be interested in any ideas that you might have about how we might fund something like that, and also the degree to which you'd be interested in transcripts. Are you sufficiently interested that you'd be willing to pay something, a dollar or two, for example, to receive a transcript or to subscribe somehow with a paid subscription? Is that something we should be thinking about? One of my favorite shows comes from NPR, and it's called Morning Stories. And they've actually gotten their listeners to volunteer to do transcriptions, and that's another possibility. And they have a listener who's volunteered to be the coordinator of transcriptions. Now, they probably have a much larger audience than I do, since they're not only available on podcasts, but maybe also on the radio. I'm not sure. But at any rate, I'm wondering if that would work here. And so let me say that if you'd be interested in making a transcription of an interview, just let me know. Contact me and let me know which show you're transcribing, and then that way we can avoid duplication. If you tell me you're transcribing show number 142, then the next person who comes in, and if they say they're transcribing 142, I can say, no, don't do that one. Choose a different one. So it would be wonderful if there were that kind of volunteer energy. So please let me know. Now, as you go to the website, you'll notice that we just updated WordPress, and so the polling feature has gone away. I think there's another plugin that may bring that back, and so I've got to experiment with seeing if I can bring polling back. But back when we had our polling feature, over 70% of you who voted in our last poll said we should keep going with the periodic Shrink Wrap Radio Live episodes. So consequently, my good friend Jerry Trumbull and I have scheduled our next Shrink Wrap Radio Live show for this coming Sunday, just a few days from now, April 20th at 10 a.m. Pacific time. And we'd love to have you call in or participate in the live chat at www.blogtalkradio.com/shrinkwrapradio. I'm not sure what we're going to be talking about, but once we get going, generally we manage to get some juice going, and feedback seems to be good, so we'll just keep going. I want to remind you that you can make comments on the website, and some of you have been doing that. There's a comments area in the kind of blog format that we have, and I know many of you send me emails. I also want to encourage you to make comments. I'd still love to find some kind of replacement for the Frapper map. If anybody knows of some other tool like that that we could use, that would be really great. Let me also remind you to please promote Shrink Wrap Radio in your blogs or your websites or with friends. We actually have some promo flyers that you can download from the website, a couple of PDF flyers that you can download, print out, duplicate, put on bulletin boards. That would be a big help. The sponsors for the show, as always, are Podshow and GoDaddy, and thanks to all of you who've bought domain names at GoDaddy and use the discount codes that are on our Shrink Wrap Radio website. Those discounted purchases have helped to support this show.
Hey, Dr. Dave. I just wanted to call and let you know that I really enjoy your podcasts. It's made a big impact on my life. I feel like because I listen to your show, I'm growing as a person, and a lot of things that have plagued me over the years are beginning to be resolved, and I really enjoy being able to listen to all of your podcasts. I just wanted to leave a message letting you know I really appreciate what you're doing, and keep up the good work. Thank you.
Well, thank you. That person didn't leave their name, so I don't know who it was, but it's so rewarding to me to get that sort of feedback, as you can imagine. My highest aspiration for this show is just that, that it might somehow provide not only information, but also hope and inspiration. Well, once again, I'm running late. Here's another letter that I just really want to squeeze in. Alex writes, "Dear Dr. Dave, I've just listened to about every one of your podcasts to date, both Shrink Wrap Radio and Wise Counsel. It took me a couple of months to catch up after discovering you last autumn, but I've paced myself well and made it back to the present. I really love both of your podcasts. You have all the right skills and gifts for podcasting about psychology, I think. Your interview skills are second to none, and your broad appreciation of the field and the individuals who brighten it up is super for doing both interview series." Thank you so much, Alex. He goes on to say, "Though I don't actively sense it while listening, it's clear upon reflection that your agenda really is public service. You bring these amazing people to us every week and encourage them to express their ideas in a natural way, neither suppressing your own ideas nor pushing your own agenda. I get the feeling it would have taken a lifetime in the field to have gotten such a broad sense of the movings and shakings, history, trends, and various personalities at work without your show, not to mention the more direct education regarding each interview subject and various theories, studies, and clinical work happening around the world. My brother, just finishing his MSW, that's a master's in social work, is pretty impressed when I can keep up with him discussing family therapy, REBT, CBT, transpersonal, Jungian, and other topics as we discuss his work, school, and the field in general. By combining your podcast with a few other podcasts, such as This Week in the History of Psychology and my old favorite, All in the Mind, and lecture series from Berkeley and MIT, and a wide net of reading, I feel I've gotten an incredibly broad education in psychology over the past year or so." Well, I would say so. Somebody ought to award you a degree. He goes on to say, "My background is in biology and computer science, but I've always loved psychology and more recently philosophy. I'm seriously considering going back to school in psychology, and if I do, I'll be sure to point to you as one of my influences." All right. He says, "I have some technical feedback regarding the podcasts and website, so I'll add that in now. You don't have to rely on archive files to account for old shows, I think. You can simply start a second feed which, when the first runs out." Okay, I'm going to cut this short. Alex is one of the people who asked for an archival feed, and as you heard earlier, I have responded to that request, Alex. So check that out. And he goes on to make a suggestion about the Frapper map, and I've already put out a call for, if you know some alternative to the Frapper map, that would be helpful. Finally, he says, "Have you considered adding a forum to your website? I think some listeners would enjoy interacting online with each other and with you if you wanted to. Forum discussions can be a powerful medium for more in-depth discussion and, of course, allow fans to connect with each other more readily, to build friendships, ask advice, try out new ideas, etc. Administration of forums can sometimes be a hassle if you have rules of conduct that you wish to enforce, but generally with most groups I found a strong self-organizing principle. People generally behave well and only need gentle nudging when things get too heated. Even token administration by a volunteer from the listeners would generally be enough to safeguard the civility of a fairly serious topical site like Shrink Wrap Radio. Well, those are some ideas that occur to me that might be of use to you. I wish you well, and am looking forward to many podcasts yet to come. Sincerely, a big, big fan, Alex." Alex, thanks so much for those ideas, and I have thought of a forum from time to time. I am fearful of all the additional work that it would probably entail, and also wondering if there would be enough activity to justify it. You'll recall that listener Susan created a Shrink Wrap Radio fan club on Facebook, and that could serve as a kind of forum, but I don't think there's a lot of activity going on there. I haven't checked recently. So I'll keep that in mind. It's been suggested that I have a forum. It's been suggested that I create a newsletter. So these are all possibilities that I continue to actively consider. So I think that better wrap it up for today, just in terms of time. And you can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. You can leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site. You can leave voicemails on Skype, where I am ShrinkPod. You can leave voice messages on MyChingo. There's a link on our site with the MyChingo logo. And, of course, you can leave a message on our phone at 206-337-0622. Thanks again to guest and listener Sarah Hanna Radcliffe for sharing her work on ego state therapy. And our next episode will feature Jim Ruff, who will tell us about his work with wisdom counsels and dynamic facilitation. So until then, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.